welcome you to Stir the Pots.
Thank you.
Describe who Kamal Muzawak is and what is his mission.
180 tall, black hair. Describe myself is a little bit difficult, and describing my mission is much more difficult. I just see humans and myself, you know, as being for a while around here, and at one point going somewhere, I don't want to know where, like just ending this life, let's say, and looking behind our back and saying, what was my contribution to life? What did I bring in? Not necessarily a Nobel Prize, you know, but did I bring in a smile on my kid's face, on my mother's face one day? Did I brought in a good seed of peace, you know, of love, of being positive, of being constructive? So I think this is not my mission, this is everyone's mission, and each and every one of us express it in his own way, completely different ways. There is not a good job or a bad job. In Islam, there's a saying, they say each act is an act of adoration. You don't need to go to a mosque or a church to pray. You just need to do what you're doing in the perfect way possible. Like Gong Fu in Oriental tradition, you know, it's the art of doing, the way of doing artfully whatever you're doing. You know, like we're drinking a coffee. The guy who planted it, you know, in the best way possible. The guy who roasted it, the guy who prepared it, the guy who brought it to our table. So this is how each and every action must, each and every human must try it in the best way possible. And how do you express it is not an issue, so express it in any way possible, as long as it's positive and constructive to life.
Your mission or your task is to bring food to the table in Lebanon. And how did you get involved in cuisine or food?
Not bring food to table in Lebanon. Food is the best expression of tradition. When we're talking about tradition, we're talking about you as a person, you know, who's like parents, a mother, a father, a wife, you know, a grandfather. Like, it's a whole world, you know, which gathered into a person. So what did all these persons brought into you? The best expression of tradition. Tradition is expressed in many different ways, in architecture, in music, in costume. Like, we are all dressed the same, we have the same architecture everywhere. We maybe have the same music more or less, and the one and only expression of tradition that we really keep and save and perpetuate and are very proud of is cuisine. Italian brought with them, you know, pizza and pasta all around the world. Lebanese took their tabbouleh and their kibbeh. Chinese took their food. Japanese took their food. So it's the best expression of who I am, where I come from, and what my ancestors did and taught me. So it's not just about the food for us. It's mainly a human development project, a rural development project. And it's about finding a common ground between people who fought so long around so many differences in Lebanon. So instead of looking for conflict resolution in Lebanon and say, you know, like, you're blonde, I'm black, so fair enough. I don't want you to convert me, and I don't want me to convert you to my religion or origin or politics or anything. Let's stay different. Let's celebrate diversity. Let's see it as something that is bringing something better to us and to the world. But let's see if there is a common ground between us. So the land, the product of the land, and what you do of this product as of cuisine and food production is really what brings these different people in a small country like Lebanon. So it's Make Food Not War rather than a foodies project.
And what are the building blocks or cornerstones or maybe even icons of Lebanese food that will bring everyone together, the ingredients per se?
You know, rather than an ingredient, I would say tabbouleh is really like a symbol of what Lebanon is. I brought you here a brochure of an event that we do every first Saturday of July of every year. And it's called the National Tabbouleh Day. And tabbouleh is a wonderful dish. Unfortunately, it's not very well known abroad. It's more like, you know, people do it with couscous, and we don't know what is couscous in Lebanon. It's like a North African tradition. We have bourgour. So, and shrimps, and it's, for me, it's like a catastrophe. So tabbouleh is simply a salad of a lot of parsley, a little bit of mint, a little bit of green onion, Bourgoule, which is cracked wheat, boiled, dried and cracked wheat, and tomato seasoned with olive oil, bit of salt obviously, and lemon juice. So there's a friend who made a wonderful comparison between tabbouleh in Lebanon and what Lebanon is, saying that usually you have like a niçoise salad, you know, where you can see different, or a stew, where you can see like the different ingredients, and you can take off like the tomato from the niçoise salad and like leave the rest and keep eating the rest. Or you have like a mashed thing, like a puree or something, and where you cannot distinguish, you know, one ingredient from the other. The tabbouleh is, you know, in between both. You can see the different ingredients, but you cannot take out one from the rest of the dish. It's so finely, you know, chopped and sliced. And he said this is how like Lebanon is, you know, you can see the whole diversity, but you cannot isolate or take out one element from the rest of the patchwork. It's just a patchwork that is holding it all together. So I love this analogy, and I think it's a beautiful image about Lebanon, and this describes very well the country and I would say our national dish and the dish set, and my favorite dish anyway. As of different ingredients, Lebanon is on the eastern coast of the Mediterranean. And if we talk about all of this coast, it's like the land of olives, wheat and grape. So this is where these three important crops for the world and the history were born. Olive, which is used, eaten as olives or used a lot as olive oil. Grapes as wine, arak in Lebanon, which is an alcohol with aniseed, or eaten as grapes, and wheat, which is our basic cereal. As you know, each land has its own cereal, so wheat is our cereal. We don't eat it much as wheat itself, you know, it's transformed into flour and mainly transformed into bourgoule and eaten as bourgoule or bourgal, I think you say in the States. So bourgoule is like boiled wheat, wheat that is boiled nearly to complete cooking, then dried in the sun on rooftops, then cracked very fine and used for kibbeh and tabbouleh. And you know, like you just nearly season it over tabbouleh, you don't need to cook it because it's already cooked again. Because when it's boiled and dried and you crack it, it's not flour anymore. You know, it's not like coarse flour, so starch already cooked in it. Or it's cracked coarse and it's like some kind of our local cereal, like, and we do it like risottos or cook it in stuffings or different ways.
What do you hope to achieve by rekindling or saving the traditions of Lebanese cuisine? Or was there a chance that it was being lost?
Achieve? Why do I want to achieve? I don't know. Achieve is very much, you know, like scale up and achieve and, you know, inspiring. Like these are very much for me like American notions. I don't know what I want to achieve. I'm a son of farmers and producers. I lived in a wonderful tradition. I live in gardens and kitchens. And I saw a wonderful tradition. And this tradition was little by little like fading away. And instead of nagging about it, you know, it was more like what Gandhi said, be the change you want to see. So don't nag about it, go do something about it, try to save what is needed to be saved. Not at all in a romantic way, like, oh, very nice, like, you know, like in a pastiche, we are going to copy the old. No, you know, like you have a wonderful iPhone or tape recorder now, I have a mobile in my pocket and in yours, like definitely enjoy today. Today's technology, today's easy things. Know to choose between what I'm going to use from today and tomorrow and what to say from yesterday too. So it's just about that, not reinventing the wheel all the time. If you have something wonderful, why to throw it and go get something else? Like just try to perpetuate it and to save it and perpetuate it through use and existence.
And what is your market, the Souk Al Tayeb, about? What is that?
Souk Al Tayeb began in 2004 as, you know, it was about supporting small-scale farmers and producers and perpetuating our traditions, mainly as a food traditions. So practically it was a farmer's market every Saturday morning, and more than a day, it's a big market, is every Saturday morning in downtown Beirut, and more than once a week in the city. So a move from rural to urban where there's a demand and the purchasing power. Then in 2007, we said, well, we would like to go and discover these people in their own environment, in the rural areas. So we created regional food festivals that we call Food and Feast, where we would go like 6 to 10 times a year on Sundays, obviously. It's a move from urban to rural, where we would go like a day to the tomato village to celebrate tomato, or the fish festival, or the kibbeh festival, or the cherry festival, you know. It's how to go back to the regions and prove to, you know, farmers and peasants and village people that, you know, you are not any different than any other. You are as important for the wonderful contribution you're bringing to this country and to life. And you have like a wealth that city people do not have in their own cities. So it's just giving pride and recognition and discovering a wonderful area. We do a lot of education and awareness in schools and universities. We have a small, we developed a small like product sale for the producers in a special point of sales. We developed a project called Communal Homes of Tradition, which is about like not doing an event in this village and then coming back, and that's it, like developing centers of traditions, of food, like bed and breakfast and workshops for arts and crafts in these villages in traditional houses. And our latest development project is called Tawli, which means table in Arabic. And it's, we said, like, we don't want just to buy the products from the producers, like buy a lettuce and give it, and I cook it at home, or like if a fancy chef takes it and cooks it in his restaurant, you know. We, the producers, perpetuate traditions as of agriculture, food preservation, but as of cuisine too, the way they cook very simply at home. And we don't want to know how they cook really traditionally and authentically just through a book or a research or a TV show. We want just to taste it, which we were tasting it in the one-day festivals, in the Food and Feast festivals, but we wanted it like to be more reachable, affordable, and be in Beirut. So we created this open kitchen in Beirut, like a big space that seats 60 people, with like two stainless steel counters, like a bar, you know, where every, this is our kitchen, it's like a big kitchen, it's an open kitchen, where every single day a different lady producer from a different region from Lebanon would come and cook typical cuisine from her own village. So today it's Suzanne with the typical food of the north, tomorrow it's Shamile with the typical food of a small village in the West Bekaa, after tomorrow it's Mona with the typical food of extreme south Lebanon from Majd al-Zoun. And from 1 to 4 it's like a buffet where people go serve themselves of food, of desserts, and of drinks, like if they were invited to that lady at her own house for lunch.
And is this market and your restaurant going to be able to...
It's a kitchen, it's
Sorry. Is it going to be able to bring the people of Lebanon together? Will food actually bring some kind of cohesiveness?
The market itself is bringing the people together. Souq al-Tayyib is one of the rare projects in Lebanon that gathers people from different regions, religions, and politics. Because it's about, like, let's not convert each other, you know. Let's see what can bring us together. So definitely the land, the agriculture, and food is what is, can and is bringing people together. Like, this is our Make Food Not War project. In Lebanon is a very small country. It's as big as Rhode Island, you know, like it's 200 kilometers long by 50 kilometers large. It's 10,000 square kilometers. It's like nothing. But in this very small country, there's a huge geographical diversity. It's like a big rectangle along the Mediterranean Sea, with 200 kilometers along the Mediterranean Sea in the center of the Eastern Mediterranean. So it's somehow like the belly of the Mediterranean. So if you just look at it in the Mediterranean context, and the Mediterranean was what we call the old world, it's like the belly of the old world, you know, like it's like the crossroad of all different civilizations of the old world. Lebanon as itself never existed as an empire. It was always independent, what we call city-states, you know. It was always, you know, a mix, a real fusion of different things. Even today, if you hear us speaking in Lebanon, we would talk like in what we call the high Kifak Sava language. It's like high in English, Kifak in Arabic, and Sava in French. And this is our real identity, a mixture like we speak, like we dress, like we eat, like the country is, like anything. It's a mixture of so many different things. And if we look at the geography itself, you know, it's you have along these 200 kilometers, you have first a coastal plain, which is like any coastal plain in any country of the Mediterranean, like southern France or Italy or Greece. So it's very fertile, a lot of citrus trees, very open minds and homes and traditions, exchanges, ports, wells, spices, you know, all of these differences. Then just parallel to this coastal plain is a very high, is all along, you know, and in parallel is a mountain chain called Mount Lebanon that culminates to 3,000 meters altitude. So it's very high mountains, very hard climate, hard stone, hard people, hard crops, you know, like we have one harvest a year, but it's like of a top quality, you know. It's a completely different tradition. It's like goats, nothing but a goat can live there. It's like more like mountain food, not much like spices and sophisticated cuisine, but like more rustic cuisine. Then just behind it, there's a Bekaa Valley, in parallel to the rest, to the coastal plain and to Mount Lebanon mountain range. It goes from 800 meters altitude to 1,000 meters, so it's more of a fertile agricultural land. And it's a little bit an introduction to the land, the interland. Baalbek tradition in the Bekaa Valley are closer to Damascus traditions. Damascus is the capital of Syria, sure, and it's another country, but it's closer geographically and closer as of tradition than of Beirut, for instance. So it's a completely different tradition. So I have lamb, it's like more, it's not the desert, but it's like continental land, and it's the beginning of the inland. Then there's a second mountain range called Anti-Lebanon mountain range, parallel to the rest two, whose peak is the border between Lebanon and Syria. So between all of these diversities, there's a huge difference. And even between north and south, south is more like round, hilly, feminine. North, you know, is like more sharp and harsh. Mm-hmm. So if we look at northern coast or northern or southern coast, let's say, it's a huge, completely difference. If we look between northern coast and northern mountains, it's like from day to night, you know, a huge difference too. So there's a big regional, even if the country is very small, there's a big regional differences in the cuisine, in the agriculture, the climate, the production and the cuisine. So there's a big regional difference in Lebanon, but not at all a religious difference. People living on coastal north, on northern coast, would eat absolutely the same, even if they were Muslim or Christian, you know, because they are son of the same environment. Sure. Obviously, Muslim would not eat maybe pork or drink alcohol, some of them, but like all of the rest, it's absolutely the same cuisine. And you even find very often like special cookies like ma'amoul, which are like Easter cookies for Christian and the Eid cookies for Muslim, and it's absolutely the same tradition. Kalej Ramadan or Tamriye, you know, it's absolutely the same dishes. Even the religious dishes are the same. You know, sometimes they take different names, but they are absolutely the same for different religious and regional celebrations.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lebanon's sort of been like in between so many cultures of ancient times and recent invaders. But what defines...
And between East and West.
Both, yes. What defines Lebanese cuisine essentially as Lebanese?
Hi, kifak, sabah. Uh-huh. A mixture of so many.
Okay.
You know, you don't do a cake of flour and flour. You do a cake of different ingredients, right? And sometimes the more you have, the better it is, right? And but it depends on the mixture. If you do a bad mixture, it will be a catastrophe. And the war and problems, you know, and conflicts. But if you do the right mix, it will be a perfect equilibrium and a taste of heaven. So, you know, I hope for just taste of heaven. I'm very talkative.
Oh, that's good. It's good. Actually, I was reading about some of the stuff you're writing on food, the blog, the poetry, food.
Oh, food, yes.
Yes.
My God, you checked it all.
Oh, yes, I'm researching. and you were saying that tomato is like...
This is my very recent article.
Speaks about Lebanon, but I was wondering, you know, tomatoes are really from over here and
yes,
this part of the world. What if the tomato hadn't come to Lebanon? Would...
Well, this is what I said in the beginning of my article. You have to quote it all, not part of it.
Oh, like, sure. Well, I wanted your words.
The introduction of the article was about Fernand Braudel, who's a French researcher, he's a historian of the Mediterranean. he's died, he's dead now, but like he's a big name in the history of the Mediterranean. And he said, if Herodot, who's like the father of history, 5th century BC, if Herodot came back to the Mediterranean, he would never recognize the land, you know, because today Mediterranean is like Cyprus and tomato and peppers and all of these things, and citrus even, you know, and all of these things are very, very, very recent additions and introductions to the Mediterranean paysage, landscape, and to the Mediterranean cuisine, obviously. So yes, definitely the tomato is not at all part of the all of the Mediterranean cuisine, like the Turkish or the Italian. Can you do Italian cuisine today without pomodoro? It's impossible. So, but and we're not using it since more than a century. Like, you know better than me, this is history. It used to be like a decorative plant, and it got introduced later on in our culinary traditions. But today, like, it's a very important ingredient of Mediterranean cuisine in general and Lebanese cuisine specifically, where we use it a lot for our stews, for our salads. It's an important ingredient of the tabbouleh, and we do save it or preserve it as tomato paste mainly. We don't know much the tradition of sun drying. We used to sun dry not only tomatoes, but we used to sun dry all different kinds of vegetables. Because food preservation is a very important tradition in Lebanon, mainly in the mountains, where like people in 3,000 meters altitude would have snow, would be stuck in snow for maybe a month or months or more, you know. So they should have everything at home, and food preservation is called mune. It's a very important tradition of our life. Like September is Mune month, and one woman have to preserve like fruits as dried fruits and as jam, save wheat as burgul, mainly because it keeps better than any kind of wheat, any kind of flour or wheat. Save beans, lentils, chickpeas, do pickles, do preserve meat like viande confit. So you can do kishik. Kishik is a mixture of like the tarhana, the Turkish tarhana or tarhana, which is like a mixture of burgul and yogurt. You mix them together and it ferments. So you have cereal, you have dairy products, you have fermentation, you know, and then it's dried. So it's like a dried food, and it keeps like from one season to the others. And you dilute it as soup, and you add to it like a bit of preserved meat, a bit of an onion, garlic, and winter vegetables like
cabbage.
Like cabbage, yes. And you have like a whole meal just from your pantry.
Uh-huh. And is a lot of the preserving done through liquid, like vinegar, or is it salted?
Pickles,
okay.
Pickles are done through either vinegar or brine, salt and water.
Like, right, okay.
Like any other vegetable, like any other pickles. But pickles are a very small part. You don't cook with pickles.
Right.
You need dried vegetables to cook with. You need dried herbs or dried molokhiye to cook with. You need viande confit, preserved meat. You need beans, you know.
Right.
You can very easily do a stew of beans, red beans that you soak before in water, and then you have like wonderful beans. And onions that you have at home, and garlic that you have at home, and a little bit of preserved meat, you know, and you do burgul, you know, like you would do rice,
right,
near it, and you didn't go out of home, and you just have your whole meal, you know. I lived in a tradition where my grandfather used to buy, you know, enough food for his two married daughters, his two married sons, and his own home, like five different homes, and we would have like garlic, potato, onions, like for the whole season. We do not go buy, you know, 1 kilo of onion.
Yeah.
When there's the onion harvest, we choose the best, you know, like which region to go to, which farmer has like good one, and we go and we choose and we buy like stock for a year. And it stays from a year till the other, you know, and just at the new harvest, the old onions or garlic begin to sprout, you know, like this is, you shouldn't have less, you shouldn't have more, because it rotten.
Just enough.
You know, just enough. it rattles at the new season. And you know, I lived in this tradition. Today people, you know, like buy an onion, like shouldn't we buy like 100 kilos in the peak time and like save them at home like as a money?
Yeah, I mean, I've primarily lived all my life in a city, so for me, farming is pretty, you know, odd, and, you know, even though I'm a chef. And when I went to Switzerland, my sister has an orchard, and she goes through the tradition of preserving all year long. And so to see something like that, you kind of go, wow.
And you saw an apple on the tree, right?
And and you ate the plums off the tree. And
it was like, it comes from a tree. It doesn't come from the supermarket.
Or a refrigerator, you know? Or a covered in plastic, yeah. That's why I always worry about, you know, how we eat today, with especially with these large companies taking over the way we produce food.
You know, these large companies, don't blame them. They do whatever they want to do. It's up to the consumer. It's up to you. Where did you vote? Where did you vote with your $1? You went to the big company or you went to the small nearby producer? You know, don't blame anyone. Don't blame the big companies.
Blame yourself.
No, don't blame yourself, but just do the right, you know, the right choice. It's always about the individual, you know, awareness and responsibility. Mm-hmm. And how are you choosing and voting? What are you supporting? And that's it.
Yeah.
Look at the farmers market today. Like, I'm going now to Union Square Farmers Market. It's one of the biggest and the nicest farmers market in the world, you know.
Right.
And, you know, today people are ready for this. Yes, maybe it's a little bit more expensive, but sorry, guys. Like, are you getting something in return? Are you having extra quality? Are you having fresh products? Are you supporting small-scale producers, you know, to stay in their on their farms and perpetuate a wonderful tradition? So, yes, so you have to give something in return. If I have a bad coffee and a good coffee, shouldn't I give something in return to the good coffee?
Right.
A tap in the shoulder, pride and recognition, and maybe an extra few cents, so...
Well, actually, one of our really funny comedians in America, Stephen Colbert, was in Congress talking about migrant workers in America, how, you know, they're not treated well, and he dared him to go do the work as a farmer for one day, a migrant farmer, and he did, and to his credit, and he went to the Congress yesterday and said, you know, I didn't realize I had to bend over to get to the earth. Can't you make it, like, waist high so I don't have to work so hard? And it makes sense that we don't know who really works hard and how we get the food to our table. So there's definitely a connection there.
Each act is an act of adoration, you know? And food is not just something you buy with money. You don't go, you know, a taxi driver or a doctor or, you know, a chef, and you just make money and you go buy food. Food is not something you can buy. Food is something that the land and the man produced. If we cannot go back to our gardens and kitchens, someone else is going to do it, but you have to get in touch with someone else and know how it's being done. He's just doing it for you, so you have to exchange between both of you what both of you have.
What is your favorite food to eat?
Tabbouleh.
That was a good question.
I'm a very good eater. I love food. I hate making a bad meal. It's like, oh my God, I'm taking extra calories for nothing. Like, I prefer to starve rather than have... I shouldn't say so, but like, I prefer to have a good meal, and a good meal means, you know, like an authentic, simple, true meal. It doesn't mean fancy or anything, you know.
Yeah.
I think nothing tastes better than, you know, a ripe prune, you know, that you just picked from a tree, or like a full ripe tomato that you just picked, you know, and cracked.
And
so, you know, we're eating life. We're eating to bring in life to us. This is our fuel. So. The more it's alive, the better it is.
I love falafel, and I learned to eat it, I guess, here in the States. And
bad versions.
Yeah, probably the worst. But the first one I think I probably had was from an Israeli girl that was working for some friend of ours. And then after that, moving to the city, you know, I'd go to Atlantic Avenue, and there was one falafel stand I loved the best. And in my neighborhood, there's a Lebanese guy. They make it nice, but it's not my favorite. But you know, a lot of people say it's from Egypt, a lot of people say it's from Israel, and, you know, different variations. But is it true that it's not just chickpeas, it's faba beans? I just want to know that. What's your version?
I have
version?
To comment on the Israel version before.
Oh, okay.
I cannot not comment about it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. Go ahead.
Well, I can't take this Israel thing anymore because, you know, like, about falafel, about hummus, about everything. Like, it's like, guys, can we get over it? Like, if you're talking about Israel, how old is Israel as a nation?
Not very old.
Like, 50 years old?
Yeah.
Like, I hope that hummus and falafel are a bit older than that.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they are older than that, they belong to that land, you know, to Egypt or to Palestine or to anything but it was. So for me, you know, like, it's not even a discussion about that, you know. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Israelis, like, just try to grab everything and to take credit to them.
Sure.
And unfortunately, listeners don't even check it out. Like, guys, like, it's a 50 years old state. Like, most of Israeli maybe were there 1,000 years ago, but, like, they just came back now, you know. And if you're talking about the best hummus is in Jerusalem or somewhere, an Arab, as a Palestinian Arab guy. So it's the tradition of this land. So this is about this issue. And there is no right versions of anything,
yeah.
You know. How do you make your mousse au chocolat? What do you like to cook the most, Jeremy? Tell me.
Bread.
Bread. So must it have only wheat, or you can add oat, or...
Oh, no,
Can you tell me, please, what is the right recipe for bread?
Yeah, no.
There is no right recipe for bread, you know. Like, you have your own version and mix, and, you know, and each one has its own, you know.
It's a very generic question.
So some people do it. It's definitely chickpeas and fava beans, you know. Some people do it fava beans alone, some people do it chickpeas alone, some people do it together, some people do it with a ton of green, of cilantro, of coriander, you know,
mm-hmm.
So it's like green falafel, others I don't even use only coriander seeds, you know, like, these are many different versions. I think all in all it's like a wonderful dish because, like, it's beans and it's fried and it's crispy. I don't like the versions where... As a falafel, as a bun itself, it's wonderful in any version you want, if you want, you know. And, you know, Syrian do it in a way like with a hole in the center, like more like in a cookie. We do it in a different way in Lebanon. Some people do it with sesame on top of it. So different ways, just choose the ones that you want. So from another, this is about the bun itself. From another side, there's all the fillings that goes without it. I hate it personally when it has like 1,000, you know, things, and cucumber and this and that, and, you know, I'm sorry to say it, but I like the Lebanese version, which is, you know, like, first of all, in a sandwich. So when it's in a sandwich, like a hamburger, you know, I personally don't like the hamburger when it's deconstructed. Like, guys, it's meat and bread and, I don't know, pickles or, and it's the taste of everything together, you know. It's a stratification of everything together.
Right.
Or a shawarma, you know, some people like the shawarma just as the meat alone. Like, no, guys, it's like the stratification of everything. It's a sandwich. This is how I like it. You know, it's a mixture of all of these things. So as of a falafel mixture in Lebanon, I quite like, you know, the crispy falafel, like freshly deep fried. And falafel sandwiches are always small. It's not like a big sandwich. It's like the falafel, bit of tomato, not to make it very, very juicy, mint and parsley leaves, radishes, so it gives us crunchiness. We have like these small red radishes, so quite crunchy, all sliced, okay? So you don't bite into things. Everything is sliced. Turnip pickle, absolutely. Maybe pickled hot pepper, if you like the pepper, or like a hot pepper sauce, if you want, like, just to give it a... And tahini, which is sesame sauce, you know?
Sure.
Like, this is the utmost importance and the juiciness. So for me, this is a version I like. I don't like it, you know, like, sometimes it's like a bag, you know, they open this pita bread, like, in the bag,
oh,
and
no.
They, like, throw everything in it. It's like, you know...
No, I like it when it's opened and then rolled.
Yeah. This is a sandwich I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like, guys, this is not a bowl, you know, a cocktail bowl with, like, two pieces of falafel, because you just eat these pieces of falafel and all of the rest together, like if you're eating a bowl of salad, so...
Yeah. So what is your title, then, in total? Are you a chef, a writer, an organizer?
I'm a human being who's trying to do his job right, trying to do his job right. I'm not a chef, I'm not a trained chef, I'm just a cook. And I think if someone likes life, so you like to eat and you like to cook. So cooking is nothing like sophisticated or mysterious, or obviously there are techniques and ways of preparation and everything, but it's just like, you know, you like falafel, so, you know, you will you will know how to deal with it, how to like your falafel, how, so let's not make a lot of fuss about it.
Sure. And do you think you're going to be able to bring other people to know and recognize Lebanon as a great place for not only food, but for a country?
All the world is a great place, you know, like humans, we have such tremendous energy, you know, and capabilities that can make a 9/11, or that can be Hitler, you know, like, and it was like, can you imagine how much organization and thinking and, you know, intelligence in a way to do such things? Or we can use these powers and energies to be more constructive and positive. So I hope that we'll go to be more constructive and positive.
Mm-hmm. And will you write a book one day?
I would adore writing, but I think it needs space and time, which I don't have very much now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thanks.